the ESPN NFL draft analyst Matt Miller, who joins us now on the Arizona Sports Line. Matt, thanks for making time for us today. We appreciate it.
Well,
We'll start with your possibilities for the Arizona Cardinals. I know a lot of people, and it's hard not to. Monty Austin Ford has been at the controls of one draft. He was a wheeler and dealer last year. He traded down, traded back up, got another extra first-round pick. So people say, well, that's his tendency. But this is a different class, a different scenario. Marvin Harrison Jr. wasn't available last year at a position of need. That being said, what do you think, if a team really wants to move up to four, what would it take and what could an offer look like?
Yeah, you know, we have an article coming out, I think tomorrow, where I wrote about this. Everything I'm hearing is that they want a Trey Lance package to come up. And I talked about it on NFL Live a little bit yesterday, I think it was. The Trey Lance package was 3 firsts and a 3rd. And that was to go from 12 to 3. And I like referencing that when I'm talking to NFC West teams, fan bases, because you guys all get a chuckle of like, man, they give up 3 firsts and a 3rd for Trey Lance. And, that was a steep price to pay for a guy who's now a backup with the Dallas Cowboys. But that is the, you know, when you're trading for prospects, you're always going to overpay. And the value is never higher on a player than it is right before they're drafted. And so I think for Monty, if they want to sit there and say, hey, at 4, we have a chance to take the best wide receiver prospect, probably since A.J. Green. So we're comfortable doing that. If you guys want to come up to get a quarterback, it's going to cost you, and it's going to cost you a lot. The beauty that I think we forget about sometimes is, let's say Arizona trades back from 4, and they pick up 11 and 23 from the Minnesota Vikings, plus a 2025 first-rounder. Now you have 11, 23, 27, and 35. You control the draft in many ways, and you have now that flexibility. You could come back up the board if you want from 11, like they did last year. Yeah. You know, they traded back, boom, they come right back up and get Paris Johnson. So there is a lot of room to maneuver. Even though you get out of that range of the elite prospects at 11 overall, there's always room to move back up.
All right, so yes, and I think that's clearly an ideal scenario to have those kind of options. I guess the question becomes, would the Vikings have to go all the way to 4 to get a guy like J.J. McCarthy? Would there be a risk of another team jumping to 4 to beat you there? What do you think of J.J. McCarthy's rise to this elite status as a potential franchise quarterback?
So I think to your first question, yes, you have to get in front of the New York Giants. And, well, I would say, like, it's not a foregone conclusion that it's J.J. McCarthy who's the number 4 quarterback. It could be Drake May. It really could be. So I think the race between those two to be QB3 is a lot closer than it was before the pro days. The pro days, McCarthy's pro day was a lot better than Drake May. And I think what happens is we get into this time of year where so much of the evaluation on quarterbacks is a projection. And so things like, you know, how well you played in clutch time. No one was better on third down than J.J. McCarthy. How you play, you know, when you're asked to basically come in out of the cold when your team's been running the ball for 20 minutes and make big-time throws. The wiring, the personality, the leadership, all those things factor in. Not to say there's anything even remotely negative when it comes to Drake May in that area. It's just that folks are preferring, I think, J.J. McCarthy. It reminds me of last year when you heard that, you know, like Will Levis is this great competitor, but he was almost like a little too tightly strong, and that affected him. And so I think for Drake May, you're hearing like, you know, he's kind of this like all shucks guy, and it's legit, it's real, like it is just who he is. But I think people see J.J. McCarthy and they see this like ultimate toughness and this big time competitor, and they're saying like, hey, that's the kind of guy a team's gonna follow, and we saw Michigan do it. So I think that's why there's that rise. But you know, yes, 4 is probably the pivot point, because you want to get to, you know, you want to get ahead of the New York Giants. And you have to also worry about the Denver Broncos, who are sitting at 12. You have to worry about the Las Vegas Raiders, who are at 13. So you're not just trading up to get ahead of the Giants. You're trading up to make sure that no one else jumps you as well.
Yeah. Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft analyst, our guest here on Bickley and Marotta Mornings. Going back to the Cardinals at 4, there's a faction, as you well know, Matt, of the fan base here in Arizona that wants Marvin Harrison Jr. and to shun every offer at number 4 because he's going to be that good. I think the Cardinals fan base needs to brace for the possibility of that not happening. They still need a wide receiver. In terms of, and I almost feel bad to say this phrase for those people, consolation prizes. If that consolation prize at receiver is Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers or Brian Thomas, how much of a drop-off do you have that in your mind?
Almost none. So I'll say I have Marvin Harrison Jr. graded. He's my number 2 overall prospect. I have a 98 grade on him. Roma Dunze and Malik Nabers are my number three and number four prospects, respectively. Mm. They have a 97.
Wow.
So Marv is great. I love Marvin Harrison Jr. I think he's going to be really, really good. There's not a huge drop-off between these guys. There's just really not. And that's, you know, they're all very different. And I think that's the thing. Is like you get in your head of like, oh, we want Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, 6'3", 210 pounds. You know, he's this big vertical receiver, great route runner. Well, Malik Nabers is, you know, I mean, there's some Tyreek Hill to his game. There's Jalen. I think his floor is Jalen Waddle. Like, he comes into the NFL as that type of guy. Mm. With Roma Dunze, my comp for him was Ja'Marr Chase. So, like, you're getting great players regardless of where you're at. And, you know, even if they stick a four, I think Marv would be the guy. If you trade back to, like, 6 or 7 or 8, you know, like, wherever you end up, as long as you're ahead of the Chicago Bears, you got a shot to get one of the top three receivers in this class.
Yeah.
That's interesting. All right, you know, for a while early on, there was a lot of noise in the media that Caleb Williams might put his foot down and refuse to play for a franchise like the Bears. The thing is kind of flipped now where people seem to be saying that's a pretty good football team for a rookie quarterback to be joining. Is number one overall a no-brainer in your mind?
It is. It is. And I'll tell you this. I don't know how widely this has been reported, so we might make some news on your show right here. The Chicago Bears did not attend the pro day workout of Drake May. They did go to the LSU pro day and the Michigan pro day. And I preface it that way by saying LSU has a lot of really good prospects. Michigan had 18 players at the NFL scouting combine. So North Carolina really has Drake May and Tez Walker. They didn't go to that one. They didn't go watch him work out. They haven't brought him in for a private workout. They haven't brought Jaden Daniels in for a private workout. They haven't brought J.J. McCarthy in for a private workout. The Bears had, like, I saw Ryan Poles hug Caleb Williams on TV not that long ago, the GM of the Bears. Uh-huh. Like, that decision is made,
gotcha.
Guys. And I think now for the Bears, they're investigating what to do at 9. In fact, I heard it told that they have, like, broken their scouting department up to discuss what to do at 9. Not to do at 1. They're not assigning quarters of the building to evaluate each quarterback and make that decision. They know who they're taking at 1. And I'll say, you know, to your point, I read all the tweets as well of Caleb doesn't want to go to Chicago and he wants an ownership stake and all this BS. That was never coming from Caleb Williams. Mm. It might have been coming from people close to him, but it wasn't coming from Caleb. And I think, you know, it reminded me of Joe Burrow when people said Burrow doesn't want to go to the Bengals. The dude was from Southeast Ohio. Why would he not want to play for the Cincinnati Bengals? And I think for Caleb, it's that you have a chance to be the number one overall pick in the NFL draft, which is what every young man dreams of when they start playing football. Like, twice we've seen players say, hey, I don't want to go there. And it was because of bad ownership situations. So I never bought into it, never believed it for a second. And I was happy when, you know, my colleague Pete Thamel, the first day of the combine, had this great exclusive with Caleb where he was like, I'm excited to be a Chicago Bear, man. Like, Michael Jordan played there. Like, I want to be a Chicago Bear. Yeah.
Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft analyst, our guest here on Arizona Sports. Other areas of need for the Cardinals going into these festivities, they need a corner in a bad way. Edge rusher, obviously a big, important spot that they need help at. Outside of the top pick, the number four pick, what do you think are some possibilities, some names that could fit nicely in those positions for the Cardinals, Matt?
Yeah, man, I look at corner as definitely an area where you can get really good value at pick 27. Cooper DeJean from Iowa may be there. Nate Wiggins from Clemson. Those two are in play there. Enos Rakestraw from Missouri and Cooley McKinstry from Alabama are definitely in play at that spot in the first round. Really, really good players. And interestingly, I think the corner market in round two is a little watered down. It's not as great. You're probably looking at guys late round two as opposed to early. I have six guys that I expect to go in like the top 34, 35. After that, I probably wouldn't draft any until like we're talking like late 50s, early 60s. So there's a bit of a drop off. I think D tackle is a fascinating spot. Byron Murphy from Texas is going to come off the board early. We know that he's going to be gone by the time the Cardinals come back around with that second pick in round one. But Johnny Newton from Illinois, who I got a chance to evaluate in person against Kansas. And I'm like, oh, it's okay, Kansas. Kansas was a good football team this year, number one, especially before some injuries hit. They have a couple offensive linemen who are going to be NFL players. And Johnny Newton dominated that game. Like, I mean, he absolutely took over running down like mobile quarterbacks. Kansas's running back, Devin Neal, is a really good player. And Johnny Newton's like running him down on outside run plays and screen plays. And wow, he's getting after the quarterback. They could not stop him. And he battled injury late in the year. He didn't get to work out in the pre-draft process because of it. But Man, I just can't get over the fact that at 27, he would be incredible value. If you're okay with the medicals, and he just seems like such a great fit with what Jonathan Gannon's defense has traditionally looked like, to where I see that guy being a big-time problem up front.
Matt, thanks so much for the time and the information. Really appreciate it, man.